Welcome to the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
I'm Phil Jared. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we are going to talk about the world's greatest disasters. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
Awesome. And remember, Phil, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates in some of these disasters, is it?
None.
Even though you said it was, do you remember?
No, come on.
You're well wrong. We're just interested in finding out what went wrong. And be honest with yourself, if it came on the news, you'd be interested, wouldn't you?
I would, Phil. I love a bit of developing news.
Don't
I've been
know?
Known to get a tub of ice cream in for the duration of the incident.
Lovely. What are we talking about this week?
The Bhopal gas disaster.
The enormity of the tragedy of Bhopal, India, is becoming more apparent this morning. Authorities now say the toxic gas that escaped from a Union Carbide plant on Monday has killed at least 1,600 people, and they say another 50,000 people may suffer serious after effects such as blindness and sterility. The Union Carbide insecticide plant has been closed, of course, now. Outside, vultures devour the carcasses of animals killed by the fumes. Doctors are working around the clock at hospitals that are filled to overflowing.
This is a horrible one. Involves probably the highest death count we've ever had.
I think so, yeah.
Because it's one of the highest death counts ever in the world, isn't it?
It's certainly up there with the London smog, probably slightly more, actually, over time.
But still not approaching something like Spanish flu or Black Death.
Which we haven't covered.
Which we haven't. They're the real big hitters, aren't they, of death tolls.
Yes.
This one is one of the reasons I wanted to do the podcast.
It was one of the first ones you suggested,
it was the first
wasn't
one I suggested.
It?
Yeah. And I don't know why, because I've always thought of this as an essentially humorous podcast, although possibly it's moving away from that with some of the topics we're being asked
well,
to discuss.
Well, Towson Torreson wasn't exactly cheery, was it?
No, impossible. Mm. Just impossible to make that, you know, a light-hearted thing. And this is another one where I think it's probably going to be difficult because it's so horrific from top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean, usually when we research these disasters, we are able to find some elements that, you know, whilst not directly related to the catastrophe, we can provide things that we find amusing as asides. I'm not saying you do, listener. This one, though, nothing remotely amusing in this. This is depressing, horrible, utterly grim. It's really, really horrible.
We can judge it up, can't we?
Well,
it's
fascinating.
What's your favourite kind of cyanide gas? Okay, lovely. So, Phil, the Bhopal gas disaster, what was it?
It was a gas leak at the Union Carbide pesticide plant in Bhopal, India.
When did it happen?
The 2nd of December, 1984.
How many people died?
To this date, it is said to be about 15,000.
15,000 people. That's a town, isn't it?
That's about half Southampton football stadium.
Jesus, really? It's enough for it to be like everyone you know, isn't it? Like if you survive.
Four would be enough for everyone I know.
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? It's like if I was gassed, Julie was gassed, and Beck was gassed.
And Mrs. Lucas, my mother.
I mean, you're out of acquaintances at that point, aren't you? That's not true. You have a wide selection of friends. If you died, how many people do you think would come to your funeral? I'm worried that it might not be, not for you, for me, not that many. Because my dad doesn't travel anymore. And I'm bollocked if I'm having it up in Oxfordshire.
Yeah. Would you be buried or cremated?
Ooh, I think cremated.
Okay.
Because once I'm dead, I don't want the chances of being revived. Because, you know, it's a bit like Brexit, isn't it? We've made a decision. Doesn't matter how awful it is, we've made that decision now. We had to stick by it. So once I'm dead, I don't want to be brought back to life.
Okay.
Or I don't want to be a head in a...
Head in a box.
I don't want to be a head in a box, if that's all right. What about you?
Buried, no question about it.
Oh, why?
Yeah, don't like the idea of being cremated. I want to be buried.
You want to be in a place.
I want to be in a place. I want a headstone. I want to physically be in that headstone. I want the funeral to be as traditional...
Oh, really?
Traditional Christian funeral as is possible. I want black mourners. I want...
Yeah.
Not black mourners. I mean, I don't mind what colour they are. I meant, I'm not specifying. I meant
only black ones.
Yeah, I'm this woke, even in death. No, I want people dressed in black. I want carols.
Definitely.
I want as close as you would get to a funeral as if Graham Greene had written it.
Oh, brilliant, yeah. So it does get me down when people say, do you know when I die? I don't want people to cry. I don't want them to be sad. You know, I just want them to have a big party. Mm. I want crying, mourning.
I do.
People to be devastated.
I don't want a celebration of life.
No,
I want the I want these people contemplating their own future because I've gone.
I have not lived a life that's worth celebrating. Oh yeah, let's celebrate Phil's life. Yeah,
you haven't actually.
Not really. I mean, what on earth are they going to celebrate? Oh, he's gone, isn't he? He's dead.
He came, he went.
He came, he went. Yeah. Without any fuss. Okay, lovely. So, Phil, I guess, trigger warning, lots of people die in this. Lots of them are children, because lots of normal people living, going about their everyday lives get killed in this disaster. So be ready for that. But to be fair, what are we at? Episode 20 now?
20, yeah.
If you haven't got the hang of what happens in this podcast by now.
Yeah, some are going to be no deaths.
Some are going to be
thousands and thousands. You just take your choice.
Have you ever thought about maybe we should top them up?
I would argue possibly not.
really?
But, you know.
I'm not sure.
Who am I to talk about gravitas?
Okay, Phil, let's get into this. Give me some background on Union Carbide.
Union Carbide is a US chemical company founded in 1917 as the Union Carbide and Carbon Corporation.
Awesome.
It produces chemicals and chemical products for things including paints, pharmaceuticals, textiles, oil, gas, agricultural products.
So everything?
Yeah, everything.
Pretty much everything.
Pretty much everything you would expect a chemical company to make. As their own website states, give me some advertising music, Phil.
Bang!
Whether they are adding strength to stretch wrap or smoothness to paint, removing static from laundry, or simply making a teddy bear more cuddly, the products of Union Carbide make great chemistry a part of daily life. Obviously, it's more complex than all of that, cuddly teddy bears and the like.
Yeah.
But we don't need to get bogged down in what Union Carbide do in any great detail.
It's a chemical company.
It's a chemical company.
Where's Bhopal?
Well, it is in India.
Lovely.
It is the capital city in the Indian state of Madhya Pradesh. Don't know if I've said that right. I'll try it again. Madhya Pradesh.
I reckon Madhya Pradesh, yeah.
Okay, let's stick with that. Pretty much, in terms of where it is, slap bang in the middle centre of India.
Okay.
Possibly a tad to the left.
Yeah, okay, how big is Bhopal?
It's the 131st largest city in the world. It has a population of...
So not one of the largest.
Absolutely nowhere near. Population of 2 million. Bhopal, for its size, is actually very, very dense.
Yeah,
dense because there's a lot of shanty towns around the outsides and things like that. And I'll give you two facts about Bhopal.
Do it immediately.
It contains India's biggest mosque.
Cool.
And it also has India's only functioning Turkish bath.
Lovely.
So if you go there and you think, you know what I want? I want to replicate Harrogate and have a Turkish bath.
Yeah.
Go to Bhopal.
Oh, okay. How come a US chemical factory was in Bhopal and what on earth were they doing?
Well, the Union Carbide plant in Bhopal was actually owned by Union Carbide India Limited.
Okay.
Who had been operating in the country since 1934.
Just the Indian arm.
The Indian arm, yeah. It was actually owned by the American company to the level of 50.9%.
Oh, okay.
So they had a controlling interest.
That seems like Dragon's Den. Like that 9% means that they get the same,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Peter Jones has come in with his massive size 34 feet and demanded any profit you'll ever make. The other investors were a mixture of sort of various Indian investors, one of whom was actually the Indian government. So they had a part in this company. At the time of the disaster, it was the 21st biggest company in India. So pretty big.
Pretty big. What do they produce?
Ah, yes. Well, I'm going to quote from Wikipedia here.
Lovely.
Batteries, carbon products, welding equipment, plastics, industrial chemicals, pesticides and marine products.
They're all nasty.
Yeah.
They're all nasty, toxic.
Mm.
I mean, pesticides, obviously.
Yeah.
But I bet marine products are pretty nasty, wouldn't they be? Like, that's going to be water, like water purification.
Yeah, it's not going to be something that's going to help starfish.
Sewage stuff, I'd have thought. Mm. I mean, welding equipment, plastics always produces a whole ton of shit, doesn't it? And batteries as well. You can't even throw them away anymore.
No.
What do you do with batteries?
Throw them away.
I do too, mate.
The Bhopal
chuck them in a school, that's what I do. Just chuck them over the wall of a school.
When playground is on.
Yeah, if I've got any mates got a fish tank, just drop them in there. Just drop them in there, mate. That's where I put my batteries.
Well, it still creates nice little bubbles, doesn't it?
It does,
And the fish are zooming round. Oh.
They don't keep it up, though.
The Bhopal plant
Yep.
You said out of all of those, you said all pesticides are horrible, aren't they? Well, the Bhopal plant was specifically a pesticide factory.
Oh, nice.
It opened in 1969.
Summer of Love?
Summer of Love. That was 67.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, 69 was...
Oh, this is Altmont. This is where it's really, this is really where it's turning to shit, right?
Yeah. They produced a pesticide called Sevin. Sevin, which under various different names, is found in lots of things we still use today. I mean, it's still a widely used pesticide. You'll find it in weed and insect killers.
So horrible.
Horrible thing. Now, obviously, this pesticide was made with a variety of dangerous chemicals. But the one we need to think about and remember is called methyl isocyanate, or as we'll call it for this podcast, MIC.
That sounds like it's got cyanide in it, I suppose.
I'm not entirely sure, but it's not good.
No, not good. A horrible, noxious chemical they're making.
Yeah, kills insects.
That kills insects.
Kills weeds.
Yes.
Your cat shouldn't lick it.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I've done my job. That's my context.
Lovely.
What went wrong on the 2nd of December 1984, Phil Gerard?
Well, things started rolling quite a lot before that. As early as 1976, unions had been complaining that this particular plant wasn't up to safety standards. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's important to get that out there. It wasn't like a high-tech, wonderfully functioning plant.
Okay.
For example, in 1981... 3 years before this disaster, a leak at the plant killed one worker and severely injured two others. So they're having leaks and things that are going bad. In 1982, two separate gas leak incidents caused some of the plant workers to be hospitalised. And there were also more leaks in 1983 and in early 1984. So it's not at tip-top functionality,
doesn't
this plant.
Doesn't sound it, does it?
It sounds like a big, smoky, leaky, dangerous place to work.
Almost sounds Soviet.
It does, doesn't it, I suppose? You can imagine it, can't you? Just big, hulking, sort of smoky, foggy, old, I should have thought. Did we say when it was made? 1969.
Yeah.
So it's old by this time. Now, on the night of December the 2nd, 1984, the really big disaster struck. Now, the Bhopal facility housed three underground 68,000-litre liquid MIC storage tanks. So underground, you've got three massive tanks filled with extremely noxious liquid.
Bit like the tanks that actually sit underneath petrol stations.
Yes, exactly that, right? Under the ground. Company safety regulations specified that no one tank should be filled to more than 50% capacity with liquid MIC. That's about 30 tonnes of liquid MIC.
Okay.
Can you think of a way of thinking of 30 tonnes?
A coach is about 6 tonnes.
Really?
Route Master bus, you know, double-decker London bus, 7 tonnes.
Shit!
That's a lot of MIC, isn't it?
So each of these tanks was pressurised with inert nitrogen gas. Right. Mm-hmm. The pressurisation of those tanks allowed liquid MIC to be pumped out of each tank as it was needed.
Right, okay, makes sense.
So basically, big tank filled with noxious chemical being kept pressurised with inert nitrogen gas to keep them stable.
Sounds perfectly sensible.
Now, going back a bit, in late October of that same year, 1984, tank E610...
Right.
You need to remember this tank.
Okay.
Lost the ability to effectively contain most of its nitrogen gas pressure.
Okay, so it went a bit faulty.
It meant the liquid MIC contained within couldn't be pumped out.
Right.
It's trapped in its flask.
Okay.
Now, at the time of this failure, tank E610 contained 42 tonnes of liquid MIC, which, as you remember...
That's over, isn't it?
It's a full 12 tonnes more than should have been in that tank.
Nearly two Route Masters more.
Shortly after this, the whole plant shut down for maintenance.
Right.
And it opened again about a month later. Okay. So in December 1983, an attempt to re-establish pressure in the tank E610 failed. So that meant that the 42 tonnes of liquid MIC contained within it could not be pumped out.
Right.
It's trapped in there.
So we're going into the new year, 1984, with the same situation.
You've got a big tank full of noxious chemicals that no one can do fuck all with.
Excellent.
Because all of the ways of getting it out or using it are broken.
Right.
Now, during the late evening hours of 2nd of December 1984, water, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody water.
Simple water.
Simple water. Carolus. Odorless. Simple water is believed to have unintentionally entered a side pipe.
Right.
And got into tank E610 while they were trying to unclog it.
Okay.
Right. Now, the introduction of water into that tank resulted in what's known as a runaway exothermic reaction.
Right, what is a runaway exothermic reaction?
I bloody knew you were going to ask me that, Phil. Right, what is a runaway exothermic reaction? In short, it's where an increase in temperature in a chemical changes the conditions in a way that causes a further increase in temperature. Right. Because it's getting hotter, that means it's getting
hotter. So the reaction makes it hotter.
The reaction itself
makes it hotter. Bit like a chain, reaction,
like a nuclear bomb.
Yeah. Okay. I can always understand things if you explain it in terms of
a nuclear
if it's
bomb.
Like a nuclear bomb. So the initial chemical becomes incredibly unstable,
yes.
And potentially very, very dangerous
quite quickly.
Right. Okay.
So this chemical reaction turned the MIC into gas. It was stable as a liquid, but now it's been turned into gas.
Oh, dear.
And that, remember, this tank is already overfilled, right? The pressure built up in that tank.
Right. Okay.
As you can see, because bottle of Coke you've shook up.
Nowhere for it to go.
Nowhere for that gas to go. So eventually, what happens when you shake a bottle of Coke up?
Well, nothing
happens.
Nothing happens.
So don't use that as an example of what happens.
Yeah, I was about to say, absolutely nothing happens at all, you twat. Fucking idiot.
Anyway, eventually the tank burst.
Right.
It bursts. The pressure was too much and the tank just burst.
Okay.
And over the following 45 minutes, somewhere between 30 and 45 tons of toxic gas left the plant and entered the air.
Oh, so essentially insect and weed killer.
Yeah, in the air.
In the form of gas.
Yeah, John Carpenter's The Fog. It is pissing out of this place.
Jesus. Okay.
Now, I need to mention here before we get into what happened, okay, that the workers at the plant, they could see this happening.
I suppose they could see the pressure getting more and more.
They could see that all their gauges are working. They knew what was happening and they were doing everything within their power to stop what was happening. A bit like Chernobyl, you know, they're not on a break.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, you know, the pressure's building up. We've got to do something. They're doing their best. Mm. Unfortunately, the plant had three main safety systems. Now, all three of those safety systems were buggered.
Oh.
Right? None of them were working at the time of this disaster. Mm. Now, the gas is heavier than air, and that means that it's not being dispersed into the air. It's not going up into clouds. It's not pissing off into space where you want it, where Superman would put it. Right? It is staying as a dense cloud of poisonous fumes at ground level.
Oh.
Like
so it's sinking because it's heavier than air.
Yeah, like the fog in a graveyard.
Oh. You know?
The winds that night, to compound this problem, were heading straight for the city of Bhopal. And that's exactly where that huge, horrific, poisonous gas cloud went.
Jeez.
It was blown over there almost immediately. And this is where it gets truly horrible, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah.
So what happened? Tell me the effect of the gas cloud.
Okay. As the cloud of gas hit the densely populated city, people woke from their sleep, choking, gasping and vomiting. Immediately, people's skin started burning and their lungs began to fail. Those who survived this initial wave actually tried to flee the city, but that just increased the massive panic that was already going on.
You wouldn't know where it was coming from.
Well, this is a horrible part, talking about, the gas sinking to the ground.
Mm.
Owing to their height, children inhaled higher concentrations of the poisonous gas because they were lower to the ground.
Bloody
and obviously
hell.
The gas was sinking. So that's a horrible thing. As an Indian newspaper said at the time, death flew in the air, the same air that had been blowing air to the lungs of Bhopal people since ages, sucked lives like a thirsty demon.
I mean,
emotive language.
Almost horror film.
A thirsty demon.
Yeah, that sounds like the start of a horror film.
Yeah. It's gross. By daybreak, thousands of people were dead and streets were littered with the corpses of people and their animals.
Jesus.
Local hospitals buckled under the pressure, not helped by the fact that many, through no fault of their own, didn't know how to treat MIC exposure or indeed exactly what the poisonous gas they were encountering was.
Well, how would you know?
Yeah.
I mean, how on earth would you know? You just suddenly thousands of people are dead.
Mm.
Like, how are you supposed to deal with that?
And this is the thing, you know, it was a case of there were just people and animals, because, you know, obviously a lot of cows wander around, don't they? Just lying just dead in the street like some horror movie.
Jesus,
it's just, it's awful. I mean, official accounts for that evening say that between 2,250 and 3,800 people died. But some of the workers who were there sort of collecting bodies claim that there were around 15,000 victims on just that one night alone. As is normally the case with these sort of things, the real figure falls down somewhere in the middle of those two.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just conjecture, but from what we've done so far, we've sort of seen that years after the event, something sort of stabilizes and the figure is... Anyways, it's a lot anyway, you know? And in addition to that, there are about another 8,000 people that were thought to have died the following week.
After effects,
Because obviously not everyone's going to die straight away. People have different strengths, different inhalations. It's also estimated that a further 15,000 to 20,000 people died over a longer period of time over the leak.
That's a huge death
count. It's a huge amount. I don't think we're ever going to know the exact numbers, but it is a huge amount. Now, the primary causes of death were choking, acute organ failure, and something called pulmonary edema, which is essentially a drowning of the lungs.
Your body drowns you.
Many victims also suffered severe chemical burns to the eyes and skin, with temporary or permanent blindness.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, and a couple of thousand animals died as well that night.
God, awful.
But the impacts weren't just limited to that night. Researchers estimate that about 500,000 further people. Because don't forget, it wasn't just the city; it went out to the environs.
A big old amount of shapeless gas cloud is just going everywhere.
Exactly. They reckon that of the 500,000 people who were impacted, most suffered long-term illnesses, including mental and physical disabilities.
I mean, it just completely changed just the whole culture of that, of that city.
Studies into the long-term effects of MRC. There aren't actually that many of them, but it has been suggested, and it's been borne out by what you see in this area, that MIC exposure has facilitated things like higher rates of spontaneous abortion.
Oh, my God.
Birth defects.
Jesus.
And in that area, actually, it's worth noting that, the rate of stillborn babies in the region rose by 300% following the disaster.
Christ.
And death of children straight after being born rose by 200%.
I mean, it's poisoned this area like for years and years to come, right? Mm. It's poisoned the people who live there and ruined their lives.
Awful. And that's really all you can say about it. I mean, it's gross enough. You don't need any more details.
I mean, it's simple, isn't it? You know, they just literally choked to death in a really horrific cloud of pesticide.
Yeah.
Is what happened.
Yeah.
Horrible.
So, give me the aftermath of that, Phil.
Well, I mean, mass investigations, as per usual.
Yes.
Legal cases, as per. Continuing litigation. I hope they got litigated up the wazoo.
Well,
I mean, it's very complicated. We can't do justice to it in the time we've got, as usual. All we can really do is give a rough potted overview, but I guess they get sued to fuck. But that's good, right? Legal proceedings started immediately after the disaster. The initial lawsuits were generated in the state's federal court system.
Because
it's an American company, of course. In April 1985, a federal district court judge suggested that fundamental human decency required Union Carbide to provide between $5 million and $10 million to immediately help the injured. I mean, that seems absolutely human, right?
You would hope that the company would have done that the following day.
Yeah, literally just immediately gone, yep. We have done something horrific here, horrific, and we need to do everything we can to sort of sort that out. The federal district court suggested that the money could be quickly distributed through the International Red Cross.
Makes sense.
Now, Union Carbide, on the condition that the giving of the money did not constitute an admission of liability. How could they not be liable? I mean, how many people are producing massive clouds of pesticide at this point?
There's always got to be a condition.
Yes. Yeah, so, we're not saying we're liable, but we will offer £5 million relief, so the lower figure.
Right.
And the Indian government, God bless them, turned them down flat.
Right. So they thought.
They thought £5 million.
You're having a laugh.
I mean, you're having a laugh, mate. Mm. You are properly having a laugh. I wonder what that is per victim. £5 million. It's not that many
it's
per
not
victim.
Not much at all, is it?
In March 1986, Union Carbide proposed a settlement figure of $350 million. And that would generate a fund for Bhopal victims of between $500 to $600 million over 20 years.
Right.
They're up in it.
Up in it.
Okay. The government of India, Phil, turned them down. Turned them down flat. They claimed from Union Carbide $3.3 billion.
Quite a disparity.
I think that that's fair enough.
Sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
They probably went in there thinking 3.3, get 1.5 or 1. That's probably right. What they thought.
I've always said, go in at 3.3 billion. No, go in at 5 billion.
Get 3.3.
Get 3.3 yeah. billion. Okay, so the following year, the legal case was moved from the US to India. The Indian Supreme Court told both sides to come to an agreement.
It's like Brexit. Why can't they just come to an agreement, says Kenny on LBC.
The thing I really like, I really think it's about time in these Brexit discussions that somebody told them to just get on and do it. Because that is really helpful, isn't it? Do you know what? We should just get on and do it.
Do you not think they've possibly been trying to do that?
But I tell you what, it bores my piss. Okay. Eventually, an out-of-court settlement, it's always out of court,
out
isn't
of
it?
Court.
It was reached in 1989. Union Carbide agreed to pay $470 million for damages caused in the Bhopal disaster. The amount was immediately paid.
Okay, something.
Union Carbide also agreed to fund a hospital in Bhopal.
Okay.
An estimated $17 million to specifically treat victims of the Bhopal disaster. That's good.
Good, but out-of-court settlement.
Yeah. No culpability, so the victims don't get any closure.
Yeah, because you're not held to account.
Not held to account. No one's held to account.
They paid a load of money, but they got away with no official blame.
Which is mad, because there aren't rogue gas clouds just roaming the country. Like, it has to come from somewhere. It's like it literally comes from there. So, there's two main arguments as to who was ultimately responsible.
Ah, okay. So Union Carbide are still saying that it might not be them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Okay. Well, a naughty dog got into the workings of our gas, of our factory. Okay, so there's the corporate negligence point of view and the worker sabotage point of view.
Okay, I think I know where this is going then.
The corporate negligence view argues that a combination of under-maintained and decaying facilities, a weak attitude towards safety and an under-trained workforce culminated in worker actions that inadvertently led to the disaster.
I know nothing about this plant. I totally think it's that.
Because that is what leads to disaster. We're on the 20th episode, and it's always that.
Yeah.
You were doing it shoddy as fuck. You weren't training people properly. The stuff was old, and you weren't paying for it to be maintained properly.
And you've got three previous years showing that you've had leaks.
Yeah, leaks and problems. Yeah. Oh, it's not like it was like an absolutely wonderful plant, and then somebody pressed the wrong button.
Yeah, the rogue bloke hasn't done a load of test runs over the last 3 years, got them all wrong.
Yeah, that's
and then
right.
finally, in 1984,
on this day,
nailed it.
He's managed to produce the gas cloud. But we'll go through the worker sabotage point of view as well. Okay, so the worker sabotage point of view, I imagine the one pushed by Union Carbide,
I'm guessing, yeah.
Argues that it was not physically possible for the water which started the process that led to the disaster to enter the tank of MIC chemicals without deliberate human effort. They say someone had to put that water in there.
Oh, like Wile E. Coyote turning a big red steering wheel.
Yeah, and pouring a bottle of Evian.
Yeah.
Bullshit, right? Therefore, a rogue individual employee hooked a water hose directly to an empty valve on the side of the tank, which would be mass murder.
That's not just I'm disgruntled with my paying conditions.
Yeah.
That's I'm going to take it out on a city.
That's something that the Joker would do.
Mm.
That is literally the plot of a Batman film. Right.
That's, again, knowing nothing about the legal case, the evidence, that strikes me as BS of the highest
order. It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, I suppose, Union Carbide argue that the disaster was caused by worker sabotage and not corporate negligence.
Funny that.
Funny, isn't it? It's like, no, I don't think it was our fault. I think somebody hooked up our hose. Bullshit. Unfortunately, it's likely that due to the out-of-court settlement, we'll never know the true culprit. We'll never really know what happened.
Do you think Union Carbide believe that man landed on the moon or that there are multiple shooters with JFK?
I think so. It's not exactly Occam's razor, this, is it? Because if you thought that somebody had done that, you would be saying, this guy needs to be caught. He's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to be put in prison. But they're not, I assume.
I didn't find any evidence in research suggested there was any police or international criminal attempt to try and find this madman,
shadowy
who's going
man
around who's gassing cities.
Yeah, this sort of Indian Eichmann who's killed thousands and thousands of people. No, we'll just let him go. But it was his fault. So, to move on.
Right.
Warren Anderson, Phil.
Okay.
CEO of Union Carbide in the US at the time of the disaster. He refused to answer to homicide charges.
Right.
And remained a fugitive from India's courts. So I guess basically he refused to be extradited to India.
I guess, yeah.
Amazing, isn't it? You get to a certain level of wealth where you just go, no, no, I don't think I'll do that. Mm. No, I don't think I will be held accountable for that. Is that all right? It's weird, isn't it? Just go, no.
So he goes off to Aspen skiing.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I don't think I will be tried for murder, if that's okay. I think I'll just stay here. Murder's a bit harsh, isn't it, I suppose? I don't think.
It's a complicated one, isn't it? Yeah. Corporate responsibility.
It's not. Yeah, murder feels like the wrong word in some way.
Yeah, because it's probably likely that Warren Anderson has probably never even heard of the Union Carbide.
Yeah.
Carbide.
He's ultimately responsible as a CEO.
Yeah.
But
somewhere along the line, you throw out blame. Some fish of blame has to.
It is difficult because it's a huge
hook.
Company.
Terrible
the
analogy.
The fish of blame. I think that it is true that at some point somebody has to take on the fish of blame. So the US denied several extradition requests.
Oh.
So they absolutely would not put him on the hook of the fish of blame. And he died in the US in 2014. His argument was that at the time of the disaster, I was with my girlfriend in Aspen. It couldn't possibly have been. I've got receipts to prove it. CCTV footage. No. At the time of the disaster, the US arm of Union Carbide played no role in the operating of the Indian plant. That seems fair enough.
Ah, yes, because we said, didn't we, that they were 50.9% owned by the American company. So they have pretty much said, we own it, but we don't have any input in running it. So
we've only got 0.9 of a percentage interest in it, really.
So maybe if
50.9, but you know what I mean.
Throwing out the net and trying to find the fish of blame, maybe Warren Anderson is not the fish of blame.
I don't think
he's just right up the chain of command.
He's up the chain of command, yeah.
But actually not really where you need to be throwing your rod. I don't know. I don't know if there's a better way of doing it. I mean, greater minds than us.
But if it wasn't that, then people would just be hung out to dry.
Yeah.
People would be lynched.
Like the little man.
The little man, yeah. Like, it's Steve. Steve didn't put the top on, so let's hang him. Steve can't affect working practices. Yeah, he can't go, right, let's invest $80 million to make sure the safety procedures in this factory are good, can he?
No.
So he ultimately can't take responsibility for when they go fucking wrong.
Do you think that when they spent hours and hours discussing corporate legal terms and responsibility, the discussion with those top legal bods went very much like the one we're having now?
You're such a technocrat, aren't you? Yes, I do. I think this is a better conversation than they would have had, because they'd have all been fat cats, innit? All smoking big cigars and drinking whiskey and all being like noshed off and that, because that's what they're like, innit? These fat cats.
Noshed off in meetings, right?
Yeah, been noshed off fat in meetings, all cocaine and all fat cats. Anyway, in June 2010, former employees of Union Carbide India from shop floor to boardroom were convicted of causing death by negligence. They were each
broad
sentenced...
Broad
sweep. I think that's good.
Yeah.
Right? Lots of culpability.
Mm.
They were each sentenced to 2 years imprisonment and fined the equivalent of $2,000.
Not much.
All of them were released on bail shortly after the verdict. Union Carbide's official position on this is now that... Phil?
All the appropriate people from Union Carbide India Limited, officers and those who actually ran the plant on a daily basis have faced charges.
OK, so it's important to say that after the main court case in the 1980s, there was a lot of further legal actions and to-ing and fro-ing, but nothing that we need to talk about, really. But to this day... There are still victims, many victims, and victim support groups are still campaigning. It's still very much going on. Some for additional aid, some for further compensation, and some for the cost of the environmental damage and cleanup to the city and the surrounding areas. It's going to take decades.
Oh, yeah.
It's
generational.
It's the chemical equivalent of Chernobyl, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah. Now. By 2007, according to the Bhopal Gas Tragedy Relief and Rehabilitation Department, compensation had been awarded to 574,304 people and 15,310 survivors of those killed. The average amount to families of the dead was $2,200. In 2014, a spokesman for the Bhopal Medical Appeal, which runs free health clinics for survivors, said an estimated 120,000 to 150,000 survivors still struggle with serious medical conditions, including nerve damage, growth problems, gynecological disorders, respiratory issues, birth defects, and elevated rates of cancer and tuberculosis.
So this hasn't gone away.
Well, in 2016, the private action group, the Bhopal Group for Information and Action, claimed preliminary findings of latest private studies are showing rates of cancer among gas victims 10 times more than when compared to the unaffected population.
This is some seriously awful shit that they've
really
breathed in.
Grim. Yeah. Now, obviously, that's a number of different groups coming out with different figures, but I think there's a...
Yeah, an umbrella.
There's a fairly convincing picture of this isn't normal.
Yeah, this is not over.
Yeah. Strangely, though, there is another massive problem that this plant caused.
Oh.
And it's actually nothing to do with the leak at all.
Oh, bloody hell.
So, there's a lot of these long-term effects may not have actually been caused by...
Because it's a shit factory.
Exactly, Phil. The now abandoned Union Carbide factory is still causing damage because of its dumping of toxic waste during the plant's 15 years of operation. So, obviously, it's a chemical company. It's making all these chemicals, therefore creates a lot of waste, very dangerous toxic waste. There were three ponds around this factory. That's where the waste just got dumped.
Further
21 locations within the factory boundaries where the waste was buried. Now, this waste, 15 years worth, continues to seep into the earth and pollute the groundwater up to 3 kilometres
bloody
from this
hell.
Farm. Now, whilst 350 tonnes of this waste has been admitted by the Indian government, there are some organisations that say thousands of tons of this hazardous waste actually remain.
So they've poisoned this entire area.
Yeah.
They've poisoned the air and they've poisoned the ground and they've poisoned the water.
Mm.
That's mad.
And this, of course, leads on to a lot of the long-term effects that were caused by the gas.
Yeah.
This is just adding to it. A 2009 water sample from a frequently used hand pump located just north of the plant was found to contain 1,000 times the World Health Organization's recommended maximum amount of carbon tetrachloride, which is a carcinogen.
Oh, so they're all getting cancer.
That's amazingly high amount. Part of the problem, though, is that the actual health hazards that these dumped or buried chemicals cause is often disputed, and not only disputed, but hard to officially nail down and go, well, it is 100% that's causing it.
Yeah.
So it's a dispute that still goes on today, but it is, something's not right, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to sound like an LBC caller. Well, Ian, something is not right.
I don't know what it is.
That is my contribution.
Yeah, I've rang you to tell you there's something not right.
Sort it out.
I think you should sort it out. Do you know what? I just think you should get on with it. Just get on with it.
But something is really grim here.
And the factory's still there.
Factory is still there. It was closed in 1986, and Union Carbide actually sold its share of the factory in 1992. It is... falling into disrepair now, and it is still contaminated, obviously, because of all that waste. And the tank that caused all the problems, I think tank E610, is still there.
Amazing.
It's just sitting outside in long grass.
Incredible.
Just sitting there like a rusty old thing you wouldn't give a second look to.
How weird.
That's just
so weird.
That would feel weird looking at that.
Yeah, that it's killed so many people, that sort of that tank.
Yeah.
So that was the utterly... God-awfully, horrifically, terrifyingly awful story of the Bhopal gas disaster. I mean, a difficult one this time because our fault or God's fault, we're going to have to come down on whose fault it was, but they never admitted culpability. So in saying that we think it's their fault, we might be being libelous.
Oh, gosh, I hadn't thought of that.
So should we just say that I don't think it was God's fault? I don't want Union Carbide. You've probably got better lawyers than we have. I mean, with my half a year in media law and your GCSE in corporate law, I don't think we can take on Union Carbide's lawyers. But Phil, fuck it. If you want to put your hat into the ring, whose fault do you think it was?
No, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go with what you said. It wasn't God's fault, unless of course God was guiding a rogue worker.
Yes, that's true.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was God's fault, and I don't think it was a rogue worker.
Exactly. It's like that thing they do in Brexit, where people go, you know, like, these are our options. Like, we can't have a no deal. We can't take this deal. And really, there's no other options on the table. And you're like, there is, isn't there? We all know what the third option is. It's not doing it. But we're not allowed to say it out loud. Everyone's going, there's no options left. There's one option left. And it's not doing it. Okay, so lovely. Thank you so much for listening to that one. Ah, really, really interesting one. Dense facts and stuff.
Everything.
One of the worst, I think. One of the worst disasters that's happened in human history,
oh,
the Bhopal gas disaster. One of the intense worst, and we talk about it a lot on this podcast, but one of those things where if it had happened in Detroit, do you know what I mean? Or if it had happened in Birmingham.
It would be on the GCSE syllabus.
It would be on the GCSE syllabus, yeah. Do you know what I mean? But because it's Bhopal, because it's India, you know, we don't... but, you know, it's not like it's not well known, because it is properly like the worst case of this thing that I've ever heard of anyway.
Very depressing research that was.
Oh, lovely. Well, I hope it's not too been too depressing as a podcast. I don't know. It's weird. The stuff doesn't depress me particularly. Some of it depresses me. Has any of it got... That's a good question, actually. Has any of it got to you?
Yeah. Because obviously when you're researching these, you're looking at documentaries... You're reading lots of things that don't necessarily make it into the final research notes because of the time, so you're reading more detail, seeing things. Yeah, sometimes you just go, oh my God. This one I found particularly like, oh God, this is absolutely grim.
This is grim, isn't it? But it feels, you know, we're separated by years a bit, and there has been like, people are really into environmental stuff at the moment, and it feels like maybe it won't happen again. But things like Tenerife, which I always come back, I think Tenerife is the one that's got to me the most.
Yeah, I can see that.
And also Quinter's Hill, you know, that's a bad one, man. That was a bad one. And Zeebrugge, that's a pretty bad one. Okay, so lovely. Thank you so much for listening to episode 20 of the CB Wallop podcast. If you like this podcast, I mean, you could do us a favour and tell people about it. That'd be good, wouldn't it, Phil?
Yes.
Word of mouth is what gets these things off the ground. Mouth to mouth is what gets things off the ground. We have been noticing some exponential growth of this podcast as well, isn't it? We're getting more listeners every episode that we put out.
Yeah, which makes us very excited.
It does make us very excited. At this time, I reckon this will be the number one podcast in the world in 2050. At this rate of exponential growth, I think that's pretty good. But we always want more listeners. So if you enjoy the podcast, please tell people about it. We would also really be grateful if you fancy leaving us a review on iTunes, because that's what really bumps us up the algorithm.
And we get really excited. We genuinely really like that, don't we?
I bloody love it.
We have a little WhatsApp now. We've got another review.
Oh, we've got a lovely little WhatsApp group.
Then we go
group.
Back to our sad lives. But just for that moment.
We should name the people who've given us nice reviews, but unfortunately I don't have the information with us. But know that we love you very much. Thank you so much for every review you get.
Thank you.
Each one that brings us to the attention of more listeners, and that is what we need, more listeners. So yes, please do that. We're available to be told off on all of the social media platforms that pretty much exist just to tell off people like us. So if you fancy getting in touch with us to tell us we've done something wrong, or just generally... just to generally berate us in any way, how can they get in touch with us, Phil?
If you want to be pedantic, Facebook is your option there.
Facebook is best for the pedants, I think.
For the pedants. You want to be angry or give a few puns, you can get us at Twitter, which is at CB Wallop is where we are.
And if you if you're an expert in makeup or photography,
then get us at Wallop Bang on Instagram.
Absolutely.
Now, our preferred form of communication is Twitter, because it is nice and easy. Yep. We look at Twitter quite a lot, but please don't let that stop you reaching out to us in whichever way you want. We love hearing from you. We're incredibly grateful you listen, and we'll be back in 2 weeks where we're going to be talking about Slapton Sands.
Oh, look at the war one.
World War II one.
Great for the pedants, a war one. So, pedants out there, start your engines. And we'll see you in 2 weeks with Slapton Sands. Phil, anything to add?
Nothing.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.